The following presentation is brought to you by The Pride of ODU, the official NIL collective of Old Dominion Athletics. Be a monarchist. Join the Pride.
Monarch Nation, welcome back to In the Lion's Den. We got Mike as usual, and obviously we've got Coach Tennant McVeigh in the house. Tennant, it's been like a month since we talked. How you doing?
Good to be back. It's been we've been on the road, off the road, winning, losing, doing a lot of different things in between. So it's great to find the time to sit down with you guys again.
Awesome. Well, let's go all the way back to the end of August. I think the first match that you had after we talked last was VCU. Tough 2-1 loss despite an early goal from Jake Lane. Now, how did that match kind of set the tone for the rest of, or I would say for September, if you guys going forward?
It set the tone in that we, in those first seven games, given our record, we had been winning in five of them. And so to go up in so many games and then to throw away leads, you just can't do that at this level. So it was, became a little bit of a theme of, you know, starting games really well, playing on the front foot, getting up, and then completely getting away from what was making us successful, you know, in the aftermath of that. Sort of a running theme for the month of September that, you know, we did all this work on the front end, you know, you prepare yourself for the other team, and then, you know, after you score a goal, we had this crisis of confidence. Yeah, we talked about bravery. We talked about a lot of different things from within that, but we just couldn't quite finish things off. And even maybe not dropping games, but turning, you know, leads into draws and leads into losses. It was quite frustrating.
All right. So you talk about those second half kind of mental lapses or just giving games away. What is the best way to, I don't know, get through to these kids that you're there, you're right there, you're so close to turning this program around. You just got to finish. How do you get that message across?
You know, that's something that you toy with every day. The thing that we are talking about right now the most is execution. So we have at no point, you know, I have several meetings with guys today. At no point have I ever questioned how hard this group's going to work. Like, we are working extremely hard in practice, on the field, but individually and collectively, you know, now that, you know, you've hit that sort of a level where maybe we didn't feel like we tried our best all the time or our culture wasn't in the right place. Now, when you're playing the game, you have to actually do your job and you have to do that consistently. That's the difference between being a very average team and being a consistently good team, you know, over the course of a season. And when you consistently execute on the things that we break down for you technically and tactically, typically then good things happen. And right now, we've just been really inconsistent with our execution within the game. And that has shown. The little bit that is even more frustrating is when we do go up in these games, it's our first instinct is to protect ourselves rather than to go on the offensive and to continue to do what it is that we need to do, you know, to be successful. So then the guys at the back are asking people in front of them to sort of do their job, you know, or and then we can't put pressure on the ball in higher areas of the field. So there's just a breakdown then down the line, you know, that then ultimately means that we're under so much pressure that you break rather than bend. You know, so we're trying to piece those things together with the guys and verbalize them and talk about them. And, you know, there's no point in hiding behind our problems right now. We have to meet them face on. And that's what we're trying to do right now as we look to solve some of these issues.
So everything that you kind of just spoke to felt very much like the Lehigh game, if you put it together. Like, it was kind of highs and lows, back and forth. And then, like, at the very end of the match, it was like, I think it was the 89th minute, right there. I know it's got to be really tough in a locker room when it's like that victory is in your grasp. And at the end, can talk to us a little bit about that and kind of how the guys handled that because they were so close to getting that road win.
You know, I think the thing to really, when it comes to ties, you know, and this is, you don't really have this sort of phenomenon in American sports because everything's played to a win. But when you go on the road, really tough thing to do. You know, you're traveling. The trips to Lehigh and Bucknell, on the we travel pretty well, but it's tough bus trips. You know, you go and stay in the hotel. It's not particularly, you know, good programs, but there's no crowd there. There's not a lot of people. Hard to get yourself up for it. You know, and you go 1-0 up against Lehigh. You know, then you concede to go 1-1. You then kick on again. You score in the second half. You should have scored a third to put the game to bed. And when it does come, where it drops at the end of the game, where you concede in such a manner, there's a deflation there. You know that happens. Now you've got to get back on a bus. Yeah, you haven't protected that lead, and even though you haven't lost, it feels like you have. Really does. And on the other side of that, and we've talked about that this week. You know, obviously the Georgia Southern game, you know, that is a little bit closer. You go down to 10 men, you're 1-0 down, 2-0 down, you fight back to 2-1, and you miss the chance that we missed in the last minute of the game. If you then score that chance to go 2-2, you know, that momentum carries, you know, exactly the other way. So, you know, what we haven't done this season so far is safeguard those moments that can pull us in the right direction. We've had more of the deflating moments than we've had of the momentous moments. But you have to create those, and we're finding it really hard to muster that energy to be really disciplined at the end of games, and to really get over the edge. Not that there's no one's fault in it, but we're doing it to ourselves. You know, you have to grasp those moments. You have to take those chances, and you have to have people come up with big plays defensively. You know, at times when you need it, and big plays offensively when you need it, and those can be the difference in making the momentum shift from one week to the next.
Now you talk about those momentum shifts and needing the defense to come through. Like coming into the season, based off of last year, we all assumed defense was the thing we didn't have to worry about. And then it showed early on in the season. I mean, what, two games or three games before you even concede a goal? You've had a bunch of clean sheets throughout the year, including at UMBC. But then you have these weird games like Georgia State where we give up five, and it's like, what's going on? I guess the question is defensively, you have those moments where you show you can be an elite defense, and you have those games where obviously that wasn't the case at Georgia State. Where is that breakdown really coming from?
Well, there's an inconsistency there, you know, in the performance. You got to put your hand up sometimes. You know, you go into this game, like, you know, and we spent a couple of days last week in this short week, you know, figuring out how can we break down Georgia State. You know, what is it that we're going to do to break them down? And you sort of don't talk about defending for a couple of days, and you forget at this level that maybe that's all you have to talk about, because you know, we're more concerned about what we're doing with the ball and how we're going to break it down. And then we became so expansive with the ball, didn't execute with it. Now you're wide open when they're coming straight down your throat, and you end up conceding three goals in the first half. So I think I needed to be a little bit more thoughtful of what was needed in a week. What makes us successful? I've had some conversations with some of our alumni about this. Like, you know, the teams that make the tournament, you know, teams that keep 8, 9, 10 clean sheets a season. Not teams that concede five, you know, or seven goals in the first two conference games. You know, for me, it's about refocusing where our energy needs to be and sort of not deviating from that. I would rather be the team right now that is strong defensively and pushing and looking to win tight games because we're getting it right defensively than be this team that plays a certain way because, you know, that's the right thing to do and get chinned because of it. You know, we're really at that. Like cusp right now is I've got to make some changes, you know, personnel wise and tactically, in order for us to be a little bit more tight, you know, in terms of our structure, because that has been that inconsistent breakdown is good one week for the next, but maybe our focus just needs to be on one thing because that's what has made us successful so far. I'm not big, and I'm not too humble to admit that. Like at the end of the day. We've got to get it right on our end too. And we've got to stress to these guys what makes us successful, and not deviate from that plan.
So let's go back a couple Fridays ago to that Georgia Southern game. You were on the road for three games. I mean, and like you said, that's a tough road, just trip in general of all that stuff. So you come back, that's a good Georgia Southern team. You lose, but the guys played a really good game. Was that call early in the game to put you down a man for the rest of the game? Did the officials give you a legitimate kind of, what do they tell you? Or do they not say anything at all? Is it kind of like just happens? No,
they do. You know, I'm happy to speak on that. At the end of the day, this is one of these really egregious situations where the official, when the incident happened, told me that he was sending the player off for violent conduct too, because he saw him verbatim punch the other player in the face. Now, obviously, if you're going to say that within a game, you have to be very sure that that's the case. Obviously, that wasn't the case. And, you know, on appeal through the evidence that was given, you know, it obviously comes back that did not happen. But I think sometimes what needs to be understood is that calls like that, and when you do make that decision, you better be really certain that that is the case, because wasn't, and that changes the outcome of the game. At the end of the day, football's football, things are going to happen. But when it is explained to you like that, and one player gets sent off, you know, for me, in a fight, there's two people, not one.
Yeah.
So when it's violent conduct and the claim is that, you know, someone's getting punched in the face, you better be right. And in this case, it wasn't. And then that meant we were playing for 70 minutes to down to 10 men.
So there are certain things that can be that video is used to review, like goal scoring and those sorts of things. I guess this is not something that they can look at the video.
It is at the moment. But what people maybe don't understand is the view that the referees can see is only here in our case is only the tactical view of the field. So it's very difficult to see anything. The incident in question happens inside the other team's dugout or just close to it. So there is no evidence. And the way that the rules are written is there has to be clear evidence to show that, you know, something should be overturned. There isn't. You know, to my point, if you're going to make that decision, you know, that what you saw is what you saw in that moment, it has to be, you have to be nailed on. Obviously, not the case in this incident. And I'm really glad that the league and, you know, the help of my administration to make sure that justifiably Marcelo wasn't branded with the fact that he had, you know, lifted his hands like that. It's just really disappointing when something like that happens in a game with such importance, especially here at Old Dominion, you know, and then it makes our job a lot harder, and it's, you know, really unfair to the players.
Yeah, that's really unfortunate, especially considering what the end of result was. Yeah, that's tough. But game after, you guys bounced back really well on the road and whoop a rival 3-1. Congratulations on beating William & Mary. What was your big takeaway from the team's response in Williamsburg?
Again, you know, it was one of those games where, you know, I felt like we started the game off really well. You know, you score a goal and then you let the other team back into it. You know, and you know, we've got to not do that, because the game should have been put to bed a lot earlier than it was. And, you know, we had a little bit of a shaky period in the second half where, you know, I maybe felt like even at 2-1, you know, they had a few chances. And but when you let teams hang around, you know, at this level, there are no poor teams. There are no bad teams. So when you let teams hang around and you haven't put them to bed, you know, I think in the last two games, like even in the loss the other night, like we've had 50 shots. You know, it's 45 or something ridiculous like that. You know, when you're creating that amount of offense, you know, and you're still allowing teams to hang on because your lack of discipline defensively, then you're going to drop points. You're going to not be put in a great position at the end of games. And I think, you know, in hindsight, I was happy that we got the result, but I still reminded the guys after it that this should have been done handier than it was. And we need to understand that. We can't just turn around and be like, all right, we went 3-1. It's really, really good. What are the issues that we still have in allowing that team back into the game? And how do we put those to bed? You know, then the debacle of the weekend happens and you're back to square one again.
So you said 50 shots in the last couple of games. Obviously, defensively, not what you want. But with those 50 shots, we get 5 goals. Are you, obviously it's awesome to put pressure on the other team, but some of those takes, are they maybe they should have been an extra pass there, or Are you happy with all 50 shots? Or how does that go?
No, you know, I want to be, it's not quite fair. It was like 23 and 22, something like that, but close enough to it. You know, the two different, very different games, one that you come out in the positive result with and one that you come out with the negative result in. The chances that we created this past Sunday were in a losing game. You know, there are moments in that game where if you are more clinical and you, there are chances that we did get, if you take them, it can change the game. And, you know, that was the difference between us and Georgia State. Georgia State had three shots in the first half and scored three goals. We had multiple shots in the first half. You only score, you know, and you don't score any. And then in the second half, you've got a mountain to climb. You know, the William & Mary game, you score three goals. And at the period of the game where you felt like you should put it away, I don't want to sit here, you know, thinking back on the game now. You know, maybe there was one where maybe we should have been selfish. There's maybe one where we should have had the extra pass. You know, every one of those chances is a little bit different. We just need to be more clinical. I've talked to a couple of my forwards today. Like, the word that I'm using is ruthless. You have to be ruthless. And that means putting your body on the line. That means making really smart decisions and really good decisions in the spur of the moment. That's what good goal scorers do. And we just, you know, in conceding the goals that we have, you shouldn't go on the road, have 20-odd shots, and lose a game 5-2. There's a lot goes into, you know, it's the defensive side of things, but that doesn't happen very often. But that's where we're at right now, and that's what we have to fix.
All right, so bookended from VCU all the way to Georgia State. Yep. I think the word we used earlier was roller coaster, kind of all over the place. Win, loss, tie, win, loss. So obviously it's, you know, 5-2 in Atlanta, but now you're coming home. What's the message? So I know that you guys are talking to the guys back here. What's the message that you're having with these guys as you come home? It's an important game. It's a conference game. It's Coastal. And I know it's still early in the season, but I know it's time to get things right. You got to get that momentum going. So what's the message in the locker room?
The message right now is this, to your point, what you said there, you know, now is the time. I said this past weekend. No one else is coming. No one's coming to save us. No one's coming to do the job for us. Right? We have to do the job right now. And it's going to take this week us being super disciplined in everything that we do. You know, I keep talking about discipline. I keep talking about standards. I keep talking about who we are. And, you know, what these guys feel to understand sometimes is that everything matters on the field, off the field. When we don't get things right, it translates on the field. You know, I telling you guys a couple of anecdotes earlier on, but, you know, that there's where I just feel like, you know, we don't appreciate the fact that consistency comes through daily diligence and discipline in everything that we do. So right now, today, I've let Coach or Josh run the session. I'm looking at who's doing the right things at the right times. When I'm not, you know, when we're not watching, or when they don't think that people are looking, who are the ones that are still doing the right things? Because I'm going to back those guys this weekend. I'm not going into this such a big game with people who are cutting corners, people who, you know, are moping or trying to validate, you know, where we're at. They're looking for excuses about where we're at and how it's not their fault or how it's someone else's fault. Who are the people that are willing to take the burden on their shoulders? Who are the people who are willing to be disciplined in times of really, it's mentally tough right now for them, you know, but who are the guys that are going to shoulder that, stick their chest out, get their body language right and go about their business? So I'm looking for that. So for me, it's all about our discipline, our body language, and how we carry ourselves going into this game. There are still plenty of football games to go this season. This is the one. This is it. So get to execute and get to doing your job right now. So yeah, that's kind of where we're at right now. I've got about 14 meetings today. I've got about another 14 tomorrow, and we're trying to identify, you know, I'm trying to figure out with guys, like, where's your head at? What do you think you're getting right? What do you think's getting wrong? How can we as a staff be a part of helping you get it right rather than get it wrong? And then voicing some of our concerns with some players as well, and trying to work through some things. So really important week from that standpoint. And, you know, we're all working through it together.
So in times like these, obviously roller coasters, it can get tough on the athletes as well as the coaches, but leaders show themselves. So has there been a a guy that wasn't seen maybe as a leader in the beginning of the season, who's kind of shown himself like, oh, wait, he might be one of those guys that I should lean on more, a little bit more to be a leader?
It's a great question, Mike. And one thing I will say, you know, and I've made this very clear around here, we've got, you know, some new incoming players this year who, you know, have stepped in, and we've recruited them because of their character and the people that they are. And through some of the conversations even that I'm having today, like I'm having a conversation with some of our young players who are injured right now, who are having really good and honest conversations with me about their role as an injured player, how they feel like, you know, they're influencing the group around them, and maybe where they're falling short. And, you know, that's really great to see. And it's not all about the ones on the field. I think there's a lot of really good young men off the field that are influencing the group now, that are seeing where the breakdowns are, you know, with maybe some of our older players or guys that have been around the block right now, and they're willing to voice that and be part of that change. So that's a really, really, you know, a huge positive for me. And, you know, and my hope is that as a group, you know, collectively, these newcomers can really learn what not to do in certain situations and be like, okay, this is where I don't need to be negative. This is where, you know, I need to change the narrative a little bit. And it's not about me. It's about the team, put the team over myself. And I'm really glad that through the recruiting process, we had the ability to go and pinpoint those type of characters rather than the selfish characters that want to make it about themselves and validate their inability through pointing the finger at other people. In tough times, that is what can happen. And we're trying to steer this whole group away from doing that. We have to look inwardly first, ourselves. That's the first point of call for me. You know, at the end of the day, when we're not going well, what am I doing wrong? How can I get this right? Where am I missing the beat here? And not pointing at assistant coaches or pointing at the players. We chose them. I chose these guys. I have to get the best out of them. So what am I getting wrong? But that goes down the chain as well. And we have to have in-house the ability to have that self-reflection and to constantly do that in the pursuit of being better.
It's really interesting that you talk about that, Tennant, because Mike and I talk with Wendy Larry. I think we put out the episode, last Wednesday, Mike? I think it was. And Wendy talked about on her championship teams, she had 17 conference championships in a row. There was always one or two players, and they were never the superstar of the team. And some of them didn't even start. But they were those players that had some sort of presence in the locker room, whether it was about how to take care of stuff at school, if it was grades, if it was in the community, if it was just being a good teammate. But she always had one or two to kind of pull all of those things together. And she told this cool story of practice about Mary Andrade. She was a sophomore, and she said she walked off the floor. They had come home from the Elite Eight. They were practicing for the Final Four. And she said, Mary walks off the floor, and she's like, what's going on? People didn't walk off the floor. What's the deal? And she walks over, and she asks her, what's going on? She's like, I can't practice with them anymore. She was referring to the superstars of the team who are a junior and a senior. And she said, I can't do it. They're not taking it seriously. They're not playing hard. I'm going home. And at the time, Wendy was like, well, you can't go home. But she said, I'm not doing this anymore. So she got her staff together and told them basically, look, okay, we're leaving practice. And went over and talked to the two leaders and said, you guys got to figure your stuff out. We're leaving. You let us know when you're ready, or we're not going to the Final Four. And she said they walked out of the field house. They were about halfway down the steps. And they said, we worked it all out. We're ready. And at that point, I think the quote she told us was basically like, Mary Andrade, who's a sophomore, just put us on the road to winning a national championship. So sometimes it's the young ones or the role players that are the ones that got to step up. And it sounds like you got some new ones, some young ones that are going to step into those leadership roles.
And to that point, you know, it's such a profound story, because the best teams that I have had here, I've always had those players. you know, I think it's hard to create that these days because of the change with the transfer portal and all that type of stuff. And everyone, you know, wants to vie for, you know, you don't really have the ability sometimes to keep those four-year players, you know, that, you know, are happy being working their way through this development process and being a backup, or, you know, maybe even getting to their senior year and still being used as a role player. You know, my example of this all the time is Amir Najib, who was part of our, you know, 2017 championship team. You know, and we, when Amir left here, you know, he played sparingly like throughout the years, but was always such a massive role model for the players around. And we had the quote in the locker room for the longest time, and it read, you know, no egos allowed, you know. And that was Amir's thing. It was like, he was that player that gelled us all together. He was, when he was called upon, he always did his job. He sacrificed, you know, for the team. He never complained. He was, for me, he was the perfect teammate. And, you know, he was always in and around it. And every single squad that I've had that has been successful has had an Amir Najib. And when I'm looking at some of these guys, you know, and a lot of them will be more talented, and Amir won't mind me saying this, like, probably more talented football players than he was. But I've went, and I think what we've done is identified talented football players who have that type of mindset and ability to lead through their actions every day. And that's what we're trying to cultivate right now, you know, and hopefully sooner rather than later.
So, Coach, I don't want this to get lost in the shuffle, because something you said right before this Mary Andrade story popped up was, we recruited these guys. That is, I watch a lot of sports interviews with coaches when things are not going well. We've talked to a lot of coaches when things aren't going well. I don't think I've ever heard anyone take ownership like that, like you did. And it's appreciated by me and Aaron. I know I don't need him to even say it. But that type of ownership over the team and where it's headed, I think it's a great sign of where this program's headed, because you are taking complete ownership of where we're at, and it's appreciated. So I want you to know that.
Yeah.
And I want the fans to know, we're at home Friday. Talent, they can turn the corner. And with leadership like this, they should be there Friday, 7 p.m. at the Den. Let's win a game. Let's root on these Monarchs, and let's have some fun.
Good with that.
Man, I'm fired up. I'm ready to go now. Hey, but before we close this out, Tennant, tell us what to expect with Coastal. What type of brand of ball do they play? And what should we expect?
Well, you know, you got a team, you know, going through a little bit of a transition. You know, their head coach left right in preseason this year. And, you know, Coach Fiddler, that's taken over, has been with the program for a while, you know, in an interim capacity. You know, so they're trying to do some similar things to us. They're trying to rebuild. They're trying to do, you know, last year was a difficult year for them. But Coastal, as always, really difficult proposition. They're going to be hard to break down. You know, they have some speed in you know, areas of the field that can be damaging. So we've got to be organized, just like we went down there last year, you know, and it was a really tight game, and they had been really struggling, but we had to work really hard in order to break down a really low block. And, you know, we're interested to see, you know, what they come here to do. Obviously, you know, two teams that are really battling out to get points at the minute. So we're going to be as prepared as humanly possible, and we know that they're going to come out and give us everything they've got. So our guys need to be, you know, up to that task, and what we know is that we're going to get them ready for it. And then we got to go and execute on what we talk about and get these 3 points at home, you know, being the big thing here. We got to use that home field advantage, and we got to be, you know, really sharp in order to get the result. But, you know, it's always nice, you know, college soccer, these games come thick and fast. I've been able to right some wrongs, you know, 3 or 4 days after, you know, you've played the last one is extremely important. So we're back to work already. It's been a really productive day today, and we need another two before we get going on Friday night.
Awesome. Well, everybody show up Friday night. There ain't nothing to do on a Friday night except go to ODU, 7 p.m. in the Den, because if you don't go to this game, you got to wait to the 14th and the 18th to see him play again. So get out there Friday night, and then we'll see you on the 14th and 18th anyways. Awesome. You got a closing message for Monarch Nation?
Hey, you know, appreciate the back end. You know, I've had some messages from, you know, people this week, and you know, always glad to hear from people in our community. And hopefully we get a big crowd here on Friday. Hopefully the weather holds up for it. But appreciate you guys. Appreciate Monarch Nation. And let's go and get a result on Friday.
We'll be there. Go Monarchs.
Monarchs. Beat Coastal.